we go.
Can I put your stuff down?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name's Barbara. I'm an adult child and alcoholic. My father was the alcoholic. He was from Ireland. They know how to drink there. My mother was born in Pittsburgh. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as well, and my mother's parents were both from Ireland. We moved to California when I was 6 months old, and we bought a house in East Oakland when I was two. And I bring that up because East Oakland in the 60s was pretty radical, yet my house was very European, you know, very Irish Catholic. 6:30, my mother would ring the bell because neighbors hated her screaming all the kids' names. I'm the oldest of nine kids. So she would ring a bell, all of us would come home, we'd say the rosary, and then we'd start going to bed. My father's alcoholism was recognized to me when he couldn't give up the alcohol for Lent. Then I knew, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old because I was in Catholic school, we were indoctrinated. Very black and white thinking, but I got that. My mother had a disease called lupus, and even though they didn't want her to get pregnant, she kept getting pregnant. When she was pregnant with the twins, they wanted to know if she wanted to have an abortion. And of course, Irish Catholic, that wasn't going to happen. My mother was actually very healthy during her pregnancies. It was her postpartum that she wasn't. And then all these kids would be dispersed to all these relatives. I never went anywhere because I was the oldest and I had to go to school. So when I think of things, I think I was born responsible, or at least got the skills by the age of two. And with my mom's illness and my dad drinking when he did, but if he wasn't drinking, he was working. He held down two jobs most of my life because he needed to afford this family. And his work ethic was sweat and blood, and that's what he told me. So you know how you want your parents' approval? I had to sweat and blood to get it. And I trained to be a nurse. Well, that's women's work. I'm thinking, have you been in a hospital? It's very hard work, but he didn't understand that. Another example of my dad's understanding of things, he wasn't very educated in Ireland, although his education was 6 years of school was probably equivalent to what we get in high school here in America. But I would do chemistry up at his bedroom. My parents slept upstairs. And he'd come up just to lay down and take a nap, and he would look at me and goes, "Does that hurt?" And I go, "Does what hurt?" And he'd go, "You're doing homework. Does that hurt?" I go, "No, I just got to concentrate on it." So it was just kind of interesting, my dad raising his kids in this country and having very different, he was a poor farm boy kind of thing. And money was never a thing for him. But, you know, I trained to be a nurse because one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to afford my life. I wanted to be able to afford whoever I was dependent on me. And I remember watching the movie Gone with the Wind, and Scarlett grabs that dirt and she goes, "As long as I have Tara, I'll never be hungry." And I got that at 16. I go, okay, I'm good. I'm going to be a nurse. So how should I do this? Well, let me talk more about my family a little bit. So I'm the oldest of nine kids, and we fought like dogs. You know, there's a question in step one, did you fight with your siblings? We all fought. I mean, it was just loud. But I'll tell you one thing, if we united as well, and an example of that would be, we had a pet chicken, a rooster, it was a banty, named Cluck. And Cluck would be in the backyard, or Cluck would be in the front yard in East Oakland. This is the city streets. And I remember one day clearly some old lady was knocking on the door to tell us that some kids took our chicken. And all nine of us, looking all alike, ran down to East 14th to get our chicken back. So, I mean, we could unite, but we were very, you know, everyone was fighting. And it was just chaos for most of the time. And I don't know how I got to manage it, but it's interesting. And the Red Book talks about how you try to take on responsibilities that aren't yours. Nobody told me I had to do things, but I was doing them anyway. My mother nearly died when I was 16. And I already planned to go to nursing school, and I was ready to give it up. I had figured out, gosh, I'll stay home, I'll raise all these kids. Nobody asked me that, but that was already the plan in my head. I was so hypervigilant all the time. And when my dad was drunk, it was really nice when he's passed out. It was just easier that way. I was interviewed for nursing school, and there was a question I was asked. Has there ever been a time where you were asked to do something that you didn't want to do, but you did it anyway? And so I proceeded to answer the question. I went to school at San Francisco State, so I would come home sometimes on the weekends. And I remember one night I went to my brother's bedrooms was off the kitchen. I just went and crawled in with one of my younger brothers to fall asleep. And all of a sudden I'm waking with all this noise. I get up in the kitchen and there's my brother in his tidy whities, my mother and my dad. And my mom, I guess, woke my brother up to get my dad to bed. And he's just making all this ruckus, right? So I come in the kitchen and I says, "Dad, just go to bed." And next thing you know, he's swinging at me. And of course I could duck, he was so drunk. But the killer was my mother was screaming at me to go back to bed. So I went to bed, and I'm just laying in that bed going, tomorrow morning we're going to have to talk about this because this is blah, blah, blah. And you know, when I got up the next morning, the white elephant was in the room. Barbara, sit down, have some breakfast, and there was no discussion at all. It just never happened. And I'm telling this story to these professors as an interview for my nursing school. The thing about it is tears were running down my face. And I, you see how pale I am, right? I'm not doing that. I'm just crying. I am just crying. And they handed me a tissue, and I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying. And because I was on task. See, that's my life. You know, you need to clean the living room. You need to watch the kids. You need to go grocery shopping. 10 years old, I used to buy all the groceries. I mean, I was a task-oriented person. Tell me what you need to get done, and I'll get it done. And I came out of that interview, and my roommate was there and another girl I knew from elementary school, and they're looking at me. My eyes are just red. Oh, you're not going to get in nursing. I'm going to tell you, ACA nurses are some of the best nurses you could ever have. And what I was told at the end of the interview was by the pediatric professor, she goes, you know, you might want to go to Al-Anon. I go, me? I'm not drinking. You know, I mean, it was just the thing. So I tell you this story because that's how I answered one of the questions in the yellow book. There was a question about detachment. And what, you know, and I wrote it down and I remember sharing it with the fellow traveler I worked with. But I didn't get the results from understanding what that really was until I went to the Wednesday night meeting in Walnut Creek and we happened to do that question. And I shared my answer. And some gentleman there was going, wow. That is detachment to the max. And I'm thinking, wow, I guess it was. I mean, sometimes I just don't get the concepts. You know, I'm just like going through it so fast that I don't sit there and think about it. And it lends me to think how much I need to appreciate the shoes I walked in. As a nurse, I'd see people with horrible health problems, horrible social problems. And I would always think, oh, well, my life isn't that bad. But I still need to appreciate what I walked through. I had abandonment. I mean, my parents couldn't take care of me because they wanted me to take care of their kids. And I, you know, it just wasn't there. I know I was a product of love, but it was just that my dad was the same thing. My dad was probably grown as a young man when his dad died. You know, it was just his dad died when he was young. So it's just how it's just interesting, that whole detachment thing. When I started ACA, I was somebody who got acquainted with the program in the 80s. I read the book, Wouldn't Happen to Me. Is somebody taking time here? Okay, cool. Thank you. I read it cover to cover in a day, and I was like, wow. But I didn't run to a meeting. I went probably a few months later. I found a meeting out in Hayward. It was on Friday nights. And I can't tell you much about what went on in those meetings. I don't know if we did Tony A steps, whose steps we did, but about 40 people would show up there, and I went every Friday night. And about a year into doing the ACA, I figured out I was the only one who was still drinking in the room. Everyone was sober but me, and I'm like, oh, you're supposed to do this sober. I didn't quit drinking right then either. It took a few more weeks, but I did. And we didn't really do step work back in the 80s. I don't know what we did, but I did get two things out of going to the ACA back then, and that was I got sober, and then I also learned that if I make a decision that felt selfish, it was probably the right decision. And I did a geographic. I moved to Oakland, and I just didn't get wrapped up into ACA for many, many years. But even though I had that little bit of experience, I went into a relationship anorexia. I just gave it up. I just wasn't good at it, and it wasn't working, and I just better off by myself. But then I fell back into about 15, 18 years later, and it was horrible, and I had a therapist say, you know, you need to go back to ACA. So I'm looking for an ACA meeting, the only one I could find. I wasn't familiar with this program. I did the Al-Anon ACA, and I went. And I didn't feel there was a push for the steps, but I went, and I was getting something out of it. You know, it was definitely fellowship going on there. However, it was late on a Friday night, and I couldn't go. So I just got tired working all day, and then staying up late at night to go to a meeting didn't work for me. So anyway, I found another meeting. It was Al-Anon. And somebody in the community found me and says, you know, there's these meetings in Sunday in Walnut Creek. You should go. And I want you to know that all I had to do was hear that one meeting from the Red Book, and I was sold on this program. And so I got up and talked to the secretary. I said, I'd like to have, help me find somebody to do this fellow travel with. And so we did. And it was another woman who was a nurse. And we did meet weekly. And we went through the steps. I would go by her house after work. However, after the third step, she was saying, I have to go and start over again. And I'm like, over? Oh, no, we have to keep going. You know, I'm task-oriented. Let's get through this, right? And so I had to find another sponsor. And it's so hard to find sponsors. And I found somebody in the Al-Anon ACA program. And she looked at this material, and she's going, wow, I'm not familiar with this. But she knew the steps, and we did get through the work. And I'm grateful for that. And I'll tell you one thing she did for me with those steps is she would say, how are you feeling? And I had three feelings. You know, I was pissed, generally pissed, and then maybe a little happy. You know, it was kind of, when you do that yellow book and they list all those feelings, I didn't know what those feelings meant. I did learn, though, somehow before I got back into ACA, that if I'm crying and pissed, I'm probably hurt. But I just didn't have the feelings. It didn't work for me or something. I just didn't have it. But so I did that. I went through those steps. But as somebody who finished the steps, I was getting hounded to be a sponsor. And I just couldn't do it working full time, so I started a co-sponsor group. And I had 10 ladies, and we met in Concord here, and ended up 8 of us finished it in 9 months, the steps. And it was such an interesting experience doing it from doing on a one-on-one to a group. And we had people who were college educated all the way to, you know, rocket scientists kind of thing. And just hearing their perspectives on answering the questions that are in the yellow book, it was really enlightening. And the Monday night meeting that's meeting here at this hospital now is an outcome from that. So when we finished the step study, we moved into having a meeting. And it's be 6 years in April that we've had the Monday night meeting here in this area. So I'm very proud of that. So the other part of doing this is when I keep going through these steps, going with other people, right? I sponsor people, and I'm going through the steps, and I still learn things. And what I really like is the reflection I get from when the first time I wrote in that book compared to what I feel now, because I've been in the program over 10 years this time around. And it's just an interesting to see my growth. It's even surprising sometimes my answers. Wow, I was thinking that back then. Wow, that was kind of enlightened. But I wanted to talk about, like, with step one, I am an educated woman. I have a master's degree. But you mean I'm supposed to mind my own business? Unsolicited advice is not welcomed. My sponsor gave me this book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And I was dating a guy who kept telling me, is that unsolicited advice? Because he had a little more experience in the 12 steps than I did. I'm like going, oh, I guess it is. But then when I picked up that book, that phrase is in the first paragraph of that book about unsolicited advice. So I've learned to quit giving advice, to quit telling people what to do. And it was a process, because I really thought I was down here to help fix all of you. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. I had to fix all of you. And the distraction of not working on me was very evident when I started getting into the program. Hypervigilance. I got a compliment as a young manager at Kaiser Hayward because I had foresight. And I go, wow, foresight, that sounds pretty good. Well, it's just because I'm always 3, 4, 5 steps ahead of people. And, you know, in the medical field, when you're doing CPR, you know, no breathing, no, you know, you have your steps to go in. I'm already doing that in my head. And I still do that. One of my bad habits I had in college is I was so depressed in college. I'd walk Lake Merced, which is a 3 to 5 mile walk, depending on how you did it. And I was crying most of the time. And then I'd go to bed, and I'd lay there for an hour and a half and think about all the things I did that day, and then what I needed to do the next day. And it was part of my planning and trying to be perfect, and not being perfect, but getting it done anyway. It's just hard. It's to see my life now, I have so much free time. I really do. I do want to mention that 7 years ago this time, I lost a brother to alcoholism. He was a young guy, and he was a really handsome guy. And I was thinking about that when I was putting these notes together, because he was probably down in his apartment 8 days before he was found. And, I look back at his last year. I was really trying to help him. But you can only give him so much money to help him pay his insurance for his ex-wife and his kids. And there was just so much you couldn't do. I owe an amends, you hear me, Seamus. I was missing my diamond earrings. I was sure he took them. And I found them about 3 months ago when I was looking for my birth certificate for Social Security. They were in this envelope. But when you lose somebody to alcoholism, which I'm sure people in this room have done, you think back and it's just a conversation in your head. Well, maybe if I had him living with me, it wouldn't have happened. And you know what? He just couldn't plug the jug. And he was a nice guy, and he really tried. And I don't know. This alcoholism is hard. And I know this program takes in people with drug addiction and any other kind of dysfunction. And I really do appreciate that they have that variety in here, and that we have everybody here. In the we're reading this right now. We just finished reading this in the Monday night meeting. How people come in with these different dysfunctions in their family, and yet when they're telling their story, you don't know if it's alcoholism, drugs, psych. You don't know what's going on because we seem to have the same traits. For me, my spiritual awakening was self-love, because I had no self-love. I saw no beauty in myself, and it got confirmed because a man had never told me I was pretty. My family never told me I was pretty, but I'll give you one instance that I was. My brother graduated from medical school in Georgetown, and my mother's sister was there, and she's giving me a hug goodbye, and she's, "Oh, Barbara, you're so pretty." And she called me Barbara Ann, because that's what they did, Barbara Ann. And I'm like, she's hugging me and telling me I'm pretty. And I'm like, what's wrong with her? I mean, that's kind of was my reaction. I couldn't accept the compliment because I didn't see it myself. So part of my awakening was finding self-love. And I really had to do that whole mirror thing where I looked in the mirror and says, "Oh, Barbara, your hair looks good today. Oh, Barbara, your eyes are pretty today. Oh, look, Barbara, your skin's good today. Barbara, that dress looks great." Whatever it was, I had to say it. And, in the beginning, I didn't believe a word I was saying. But I did get it. But I had to learn that I had an inner beauty and I had an outer beauty. And that was really important for me. The other thing was to quit being a martyr. There's a line on Dolly Parton, don't ask me the name of the movie, James Woods in it, but she says, "You need to get off the cross and let somebody else use the wood." I love that line. I can't tell you what movie it came from, but I know that line because it just like Scarlet with the dirt, it just goes for me. I mean, that's really true. Get off the cross. Get off the cross. And I'm just not making other people my projects. I'm not doing it. It's really easy for me to say no and understand that as a complete sentence. I'm reading here because I thought I was, let me end with this. I had, on the love thing, you have these times where you hate to say no. You don't want to cause any waves. And yet you need to do it. So I had to learn how to come from love. And this is something I share with my sponsees. If your intention is coming from love, no matter what you're saying, is true and authentic. And how it's received by the other person, you can't be responsible for. But if you're saying it from love, that's what you do. So you should see me texting. Text. Delete. It takes me 3 or 4 times to get the text right so that I can drop whatever it is that I want to project and come from a place of love. You get more flies with honey, what type of thing. But that's my thoughts, my interactions, and my conversations. I think I try to do that. And the delete is the pause that allows me to regroup. I just worked with a sponsee last week, and we were doing powerlessness versus helplessness. And she had her explanation, and I said, well, that's not what I see. And what I see is powerlessness when you really have to surrender. There's nothing you can do. It's the weather's always the easiest one to use, right? I go, but helplessness is if there is an action you can do, that there's something you can do. Because being raised Catholic, God helps those who help themselves. So I should be doing this. So when I, you know, I said, I go, it goes from, your action goes from doing absolutely nothing to doing something. And I can't believe how long that took me to learn, but I really appreciate it. I think I have a better understanding, and I still have my oops kind of thing. But when I reflect on the day, I see, well, what did I learn here? What is a different way of doing this? How could I prevent this from happening again? And I have to tell you, I'm a retired nurse. I'm a happy person. And my life is full of love, full of happiness. And my family, I miss my brother. I think about him every day. But there's a sense, there's the chaos is not where it used to be. So I hope you can use something of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. Great. Great. Thank you.